I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome back to Radio Times. Dan Truman is a composer, a programmer, instrument maker, Norwegian Hardanger fiddle player, Princeton University music professor, and co-founder of Plork, that's the Princeton Laptop Orchestra. His new CD is Neither Anvil Nor Pulley, performed with the ensemble So Percussion on Cantaloupe Music. In the CD press material, Truman says, "What is this tool we call a computer? Unlike the anvil or the pulley, the computer hides its purpose." We were intrigued with his approach to music and asked him to join us today on Radio Times while we play selections from several of his CDs. And I'm happy to say he also brought his fiddle with us, or with him, I should say, for a demonstration. And Dan Truman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Describe your Norwegian Hardanger fiddle, which you have right in front of you there.
Yeah, this is an elaborately decorated instrument, as you can see, and it, you know, people ask me a lot, what's the difference between a fiddle and a violin, and, yes. And in this case, it's really quite different. It has, it's tuned up quite high, which, you know, if you play violin, you'll recognize that, but it, especially underneath, it's got these extra strings, sympathetic strings that ring along.
So four on top?
Four on top, and then five underneath. And those ones underneath, we call them understrings, and they just sing along as we play. So that's sort of the magic component of the instrument.
And is that what attracted you to this instrument, this kind of fiddle?
That, combined with the music that's traditionally played with it. When I first heard it, it had one of those musical experiences that I think most musicians have at some point, where you just can't believe what you're hearing and you need to find out more. And certainly the sympathetic strings played a big part in that sound that kind of grabbed me.
And where were you when you first heard it?
I remember exactly where I was. I was, you know, sitting on a couch in my room in Cincinnati at the time, and somebody gave me a cassette tape of some of this music from the 50s, actually. And I just fell in love with it.
And yeah. And because of just the mix of sounds, the fact that it has this sort of higher sound to it?
It's got a higher sound. It's got this warm, ringing sound. And also, one of the things I didn't mention is it has a flat bridge. Now, so violins normally have a pretty curved bridge, mm-hmm. so that all the strings are individually accessible. On this instrument, the bridge is almost flat, so it's really hard to play individual strings. So most of the time, you're playing two or three strings at a time. So it's got this big, rich sound with lots of melodies happening simultaneously. So that also kind of really drew me.
Well, I'm looking at it, and I'm sorry to say to our listeners, I'm sorry you can't see it, although we have posted some photos on our Facebook page. Yeah. It's very elaborately decorated. Yeah. Lots of inlay.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. I love it. Yeah.
And carved at the top, there's even a little head at the very top.
There's a dragon head at the top of this one. That's right. It does look a bit like a Viking ship.
It does look, yes. And do you electrify this? Do you need to electrify it? Is that something you have done to the Hardanger fiddle?
It's fairly common to put a microphone on it. So it's used primarily, actually, for dancing.
Oh.
And when you play for dancing, traditionally you'd sit in the middle of the room and they would dance around you. Of course, these days we tend to sit off on the side and they put a mic on the fiddle, and they actually put a mic on our feet so that you can be really big for the dancers to hear you. That's about it in terms of electrifying it for me. It's mostly just the good old-fashioned sound of the instrument. You bow it, that's right, yeah.
Tell us about this new CD, and it has such a fascinating name and sort of thinking, I think, behind it, Neither Anvil Nor Pulley. And I can see, I mean, talk about mechanical, right?
Right. Yeah, so, you know, this instrument in front of me, this fiddle, you look at it, and you sort of know what to do, even if you aren't able to do it. I mean, it's got these strings, and if there's a bow next to it, you figure, I take this bow and I put it on the strings and some sound will come out. You look at a laptop and you think about making music, and I mean, of course, if you do this, you sort of know some software and so on, but thinking about it as a musical instrument, it's not obvious what you do with it. And so that was the motivation for the title. In the sense that I was trying to build some instruments for this incredible group, these four virtuosos, you know, it's just these incredible percussionists. I wanted to make instruments for them to play that were worthy of them, and but also not just reproductions of old instruments that somehow had a component that was unique to computation, was really only meaningful and possible mm-hmm. coming from a computer. And so that's really not obvious what that would be. So that was where the title comes from for that.
Yeah. Well, I do want to play just a section from 120 BPM beats per minute, or what is your metronome thinking? And I we're just going to play a minute and 9 seconds of this, but I want, what should we be listening for? And what are we listening to as we listen to this?
Well, yeah, it will depend on which minute and 9 seconds
it is. It's the very beginning.
Towards the beginning, right. Okay, so there... the percussionists each have an instrument that is basically a metronome. Sounds like a little click. And one of the things about metronomes is that they don't listen to us.
Right.
And in this case, I've given the percussion ensemble one way to have the metronome listen to us. They hit these little wood blocks, and it resets the metronome. It has it start over. So they can hit their wood blocks together, and all their metronomes will be together. Or they can hit them off by certain rhythms, and then their metronomes will be kind of off in interesting ways. And so that's the basic instrument they're playing there, basically this resettable metronome.
Let's listen. This is 120 BPM. That's the first 1 minute and 9 seconds of 100 BPM composed by our guest, Dan Truman. And that's a soul percussion, Josh Quillen, Adam Slawinski, Jason Truding, and Eric Beach. It's mesmerizing. I mean, you're playing with rhythm, and it's so interesting to watch you listen to them play your composition. What were you listening for? And is that written down?
It is written down. It's all written down, although there's a middle section in that excerpt where I asked them to improvise sort of sparsely, and that's where it became sort of free and busy and wild. And so one of the nice things that happens there is that their metronomes become desynchronized. So you get these little clicks coming in and out all over the place. And then in the midst of that mess, at one point they kind of click their sticks together, and then bam, their metronomes come together.
Wow.
And then there's one other part in there where I just love how good they are, because they do this thing where they play their wood blocks really quickly one after another, ticka ticka, and then the metronomes come ticka 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 ticka, and if they're off by the tiniest bit, then the ticka 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 becomes ticka 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 or something weird, and they're just so good at it. But there's a sort of unyielding quality to the metronomes that they then have to live with the consequences of what they do. But they're so good at it, I think they really enjoy the challenge of having their musicianship being tested that way.
Let me play another selection from this new CD, and this is one called Feedback, in which a famous Bach prelude becomes ill-tempered. A little joke there. Let's listen to this, and then we'll talk about it. And this is the first 1 minute and 11 seconds.
Thank you.
That's Feedback, a Dan Truman composition from Neither Anvil Nor Pulley with a So Percussion performing. This intrigues me because in certain ways, when you hear Feedback, it seems like everybody, including the musician, has this visceral response like, ah, you know, this is painful. It hurts. We have to fix it. Mm-hmm. But you make us listen to this. And there's all this tension in it. And then it kind of resolves. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of dissolves. Mm-hmm. And then it resolves. Mm-hmm. What do you find interesting about Feedback?
Well, I mean, what you said is right on in the sense that Feedback, if it's not actually painful, then it feels like it's going to be soon. And we do have this knee-jerk reaction to cover our ears.
Yeah.
And, you know, this piece, whenever they're performing it, the sound engineers are always totally freaked out. Because they're like, well, what's the good feedback and what's the bad feedback? Interestingly, I mean, the feedback in this, in performance, is not particularly loud. And that's because, should I describe the instrument that
Please.
He's playing? Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a big bass drum that, you can't get your arms around this. And on each of the skins of this bass drum, there's a speaker driver. And so the bass drum is basically a big speaker. And normally you avoid putting microphones in front of speakers because you get feedback. Well, right. Instead, I ask, this is Josh Quillen who plays this instrument in this piece. In both hands, instead of drumsticks, he has microphones. And so he's able to get both the skins of the drum to feed back. But the feedback, the microphones are then going through the computer, and the feedback is being fixed at particular notes. And so it can't just feed back at any pitch. And I just happen to have those notes go through the main pitches of this Bach prelude. And so it actually, the drum itself and the laptop part prevent it from getting too loud. And all the time, Josh is actually wrestling with his instrument. He's got his arms around it. He's pushing on it in certain ways to try to get it to feedback at certain pitches or to calm it down a little bit. So
let's take a very short break. They're playing my song. Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Our guest is Dan Truman. He's a composer, Hardinger fiddler, and electronic musician. Much more music and conversation after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Cornwall Manor, an active senior living community in Cornwall, Lebanon County. Situated on a 190-acre wooded campus, this community offers independence, wellness, and fitness activities, educational and musical programs, and the peace of mind of on-site healthcare if needed. Cornwall Manor's range of residential choices includes apartments and homes, including their newest options, the Carriage House and the Grove. Details and tour information online at cornwallmanor.org.
You decide the winners at WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs, June 20th at WHYY in Philadelphia. Food fanatics will love this two-hour tasting, featuring an array of mouth-watering munchies served up by local restaurants and businesses, all competing to be named 2013's Best of the Chefs, with summer beer garden, specialty cocktails, and live music. WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs. Tickets at whyy.org/events.
Could your grass clippings be contaminating compost and killing other plants? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how modern herbicides are turning cut grass blades into cold-blooded killers. Plus, answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Dan Truman, again a composer, Hardinger fiddler, electronic musician. He teaches music at Princeton University, and he's come in to discuss some of his recordings, including a new CD, Neither Anvil Nor Pulley, which is performed by the Brooklyn Ensemble So Percussion. We're also going to be talking about his work with Plork, that's the Princeton Laptop Orchestra, and we do have some music waiting in the wings, but I'm interested in you as a instrument maker, which mm-hmm. you are, mm-hmm. but not, I guess, in the sort of traditional sense. I mean, it seems like you're interested in sound.
Yeah, that's right. And some of that comes from the Hardanger fiddle that we were talking about earlier. When I started playing this instrument, I just was so struck by how these slight differences in design totally changed the kind of music that I could make, mm-hmm. the kind of music it inspired. And so that's sort of become a model for me in terms of building new instruments. Now, it's true, I don't most of the time sit down with wood and saws and stuff like that. I've done some of that in the past. I'm not very good at it, and I've suffered various wounds from that sort of thing. but I sort of retreat to the safety of software instruments for the most part. And in that case, again, I'm trying to make things that inspire us physically, actually, to make music, to play with sound. And 99% of the things that I try are just not very interesting. Right. So I'll spend, you know, a minute with it and go, it's the cases where I'll build something like the two instruments in the So Percussion piece. And 3 days later, I'll sort of wake up and realize I've just been playing with it constantly. And that to me, this is a good sign. This means there's something going on here. There's something that's engaging about this. So I'm sort of always searching for that.
So what does your studio look like?
Oh, it's a lovely little attic studio. Mm-hmm. I have my fiddles hanging on one wall and then my computer and little, you know, speakers on another wall. And lots of room to play, basically. I like to make music with people, and so I have sort of space to play with other fiddlers and musicians who come by.
But you always have to be so careful when you're talking about music and new music and stretching boundaries and categories. I mean, are you trying to sort of get out of some of the way that we segregate sounds and, you know, classical music and jazz and folk?
Right, yeah. You know, I don't think I'm consciously trying to do anything like that. And the question about my studio is interesting in the sense that I have the fiddles hanging there. I've got the computer there, and I go back and forth between them all the time. And whenever I'm making new music, I basically just see it all at my disposal, and I'll use whatever seems to be right at that time. And the result is, now that my studio is this hodgepodge of things, that ends up in the music, because that's sort of what I do as a musician.
So it has to. It's obviously as the composer, the musician, it has to feel right to you.
Yeah, that's true. And again, I think the question of how lost I get in it.
Yeah.
So if I feel like, you know, as a fiddler, I sit and I play tunes and I get lost in the world of these tunes. In the fiddle world, they talk about playing yourself away. So if you're playing for dancing, for instance, you'll play and basically you almost lose consciousness and, you know, time will go by and then later you realize you have no idea what happened.
Yeah. And that's a wonderful place to be, isn't
it? Fantastic, yeah. And so I'm always frustrated if I'm making something new, a new piece or a new instrument that somehow inhibits that, you know, gets in the way or feels, you know, like it doesn't provide a way to get to some place that I can't get to otherwise.
I want to play another piece, and this is from a different CD called Criss Cross. I guess the CD is called Criss Cross, and this is a song called Criss Cross. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, again, if there's something – this is very different from what we heard from your new CD.
Yeah, right. So this is a collaboration with Brittany Haas, who is a fantastic young fiddler who was actually an undergraduate at Princeton. And she and I worked together on a whole bunch of tunes. And it in some ways comes from a similar place in that she plays a five-string fiddle. And it's tuned up totally differently than my Hardanger fiddle here. So part of our problem was, how do we play together? So the whole mission was to make tunes together that we could play together. And so this first track is one of those tunes. She actually made the tune, and then I made this big arrangement for it that we put together.
And it also includes Natalie Haas on cello. Is that a sister?
That's her older sister. Fabulous cellist, yeah.
Jordan Tice, guitar, Corey DeMario, bass, and Dan Truman playing
Hardanger fiddle. Yeah.
Hardanger fiddle. Let's listen. again, a song called Crisscross from a 2012 CD called Crisscross as well. I really like that. I mean, you and I were sort of rocking to those rhythms. Now, that those high notes, is that you?
That's me, yeah. I'm playing these, what they call artificial harmonics on the Hardanger fiddle there, yeah.
And the bass line is, it's such a nice sort of counterpoint to those high notes.
Yeah, oh, good. I'm glad you think so. That's, I mean, that, I love the bass line. That comes actually, funny, from all the stuff I've done with Bach, actually, over the years, studying Bach and counterpoint. I teach counterpoint a lot. And so the bass line in a lot of this music really comes from that, as opposed to a lot of how we're taught to do bass lines with chords. This is more about a line, a bass line that has its own trajectory. So it sometimes goes in funny places.
Who else is, I mean, has Bach been an influence on you?
Oh, big time, yeah. I mean, I grew up playing that. In terms of my classical training as a violinist, that's really the music that stayed with me since I've become transformed into a fiddler.
Yes.
The one thing that remains is the Bach. And at Princeton, I teach Bach-style counterpoint.
Oh, wow.
So it's part of my daily life.
Well, and I've always thought there's a part of Bach that is so sort of mathematical in a way.
Mm-hmm. Very precise and architectural and really highly crafted, and if you pull one little note out of the wrong place, the whole thing will fall down. So
were you a child prodigy? I know you played violin.
No.
Were you a gifted
I was
player?
Reasonably gifted, but not anywhere near a child prodigy. I was very interested young, begging my parents when I was 2.5 and 3. Play violin, yeah. But, you know, I definitely encountered limits. I was not a prodigy. I was not going to be a professional classical violinist. And I don't think I ever really wanted to be. You know, I discovered recently that what I really wanted from when I was 2.5 was to be a fiddler. But where I grew up, there weren't really any fiddlers around.
Long Island,
so,
right?
Exactly. There wasn't that at my disposal. And so I think it makes sense that you're not necessarily as good at things that you, in your heart, aren't really wanting to do.
So were you in school bands? Did you have a band?
Growing up, a little bit, but, you know, I was pretty much a classical violin geek growing up. And when I was in college, I started playing in bands a little bit. And then I started playing jazz, and I had the 6-string electric violin that I played. And it wasn't until sort of the midst of that struggle to find the music that I wanted to play with this instrument that I discovered the Hardanger fiddle, and I was primed for it, and I just fell for it.
So is a violin sort of like ballet, and a fiddle is like modern dance? I mean, is that how those instruments might be different from each other?
Well, no, I think they both have really old traditions. Mainly, I think the biggest difference has to do with how people learn that music. In classical violin, you learn it through reading notation. With fiddle music, you learn it all by ear. And so with fiddle music, you know, the constraints of your memory become a major issue. And the way things change as they're passed on by ear becomes very important.
Did you have to unlearn things to be a fiddle player?
I did, yeah. And in fact, this Hardanger fiddle, this Norwegian fiddle, helped me with that because it was smaller and it felt different enough that it forced my years of training, you know, in my bow arm and my fingers to accommodate and try to find something else.
Mm-hmm. Relax?
To relax, that's right, because classical violin, you're constantly trying to project over an orchestra, be really loud, lots of power. With the Hardanger fiddle in particular, it's actually much more graceful. It's much more about sort of pulling out a ringing sound from the instrument. So it's not as powerful. It's more gentle.
That's Dan Truman, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's a composer, Hardanger fiddle player, electronic musician, teaches music at Princeton University. He also is a co-founder of the Princeton Laptop Orchestra, or PLORC. And we're playing selections from some of his CDs. And I have to say, it seems you love language. I mean, it seems like you love to play with words. Even some of the titles of some of your compositions are fun. Is that true? I mean, you like playing with words
as
much as perhaps even notes?
Well, no. I mean, I like playing with notes more than anything. But the words really help me creatively in terms of composing these pieces. And I don't usually have titles ahead of time. Usually the titles emerge as the pieces emerge, as the tunes emerge. And sometimes when things go well, a title will emerge at just the right moment. I might be stuck. Where's this piece going?
Mm-hmm.
And then some aspect of the title of what I'm struggling with will clarify, and then that'll help the music go forward.
Well, this next one we're going to play, also from Criss Cross, is called 7-9-11. So where did that title come from?
Well, that's actually kind of technical. You'll hear the rhythm in this is pretty intense. And there's the 7 beats, 9 beats, 11 beats that make up the tune. And so this title is kind of sort of uninspired in terms of language, but it comes directly from the music that we're playing. Yeah.
And again, this is a Brittany Haas 5-string fiddle, mm-hmm. Nodley Haas cello, Jordan Tice guitar, Corey Dunamaro on bass, and you're playing the Hardinger fiddle.
Yeah.
Let's listen. Again, 7-9-11 from the CD, Criss Cross. So who's clapping?
Oh.
Or is that clap? I guess that, I should ask you.
No,
okay,
that's clapping. That's right. Check. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a recording project. We added the clapping in the recording because we can't really do it while we're playing.
No.
But it just seems sort of festive.
It does. Did that come afterwards? I mean, as you were listening to it or recording it?
It came during the recording project. We were recording it, and you know, at that point, you're realizing, well, we could do a little bit more when we make this record. And we had a couple other tracks with some clapping, and it seemed this one in particular, the rhythm is complex at times, and sometimes the clapping goes with that, and sometimes the clapping just sort of sits back on the backbeat and sort of keeps things anchored. And so it was fun to have that element there, but not have it be a drum or something. Be it, you know, more of a sing-along type of thing.
Right? Clapping doesn't
invite clapping along,
that,
that's right. Yeah.
You mentioned Bach as an influence. Yeah. Who else has been an influence on you as a composer, musician?
Yeah, so this fiddle music from Norway in particular, and it's hard to identify composers. They don't even call themselves composers. They don't talk about composing. They talk about making tunes, right? You know, and that music and that sort of that culture of making and sharing tunes has been enormously influential, both in terms of the details of the kinds of notes and rhythms that I like to put together, but also in terms of the process of making music with other people and really trying to collaborate, trusting your ears, and trying to sort of create a community in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that for sure. I mean, another, of course, Stravinsky. I mean, I spent a lot of time with Stravinsky, you know.
Stravinsky.
Yeah, and Morton Feldman is another composer who, you know, he's got this incredible quality with these very quiet sonorities, which we're not hearing here very much, but it's something that's part of what I do and what I'm drawn to in a way. And, you know, it's interesting. a lot of current composers. There's so much wonderful composing going on out there now, including, you know, people like my colleagues Steve Mackey and Paul Lansky, people who have really, you know, influenced the way I think about music and write music.
Do you listen to rock and roll? I mean, stuff that you might hear on
all the
radio?
All the time, yeah. You know, I just took my daughter to see Taylor Swift.
Oh,
my daughter's 12, and Taylor, I'm indebted to Taylor Swift for sort of, you know, putting out the childhood battles in the backseat of the car. You know, but actually, I love this music, and I listen to it all the time, yeah.
I read that you majored in physics. Is that true?
I did, yeah.
What was that about?
What was that about, exactly? My dad's a theoretical physicist.
Oh,
and so I grew up in a scientific family, and was very drawn to it. Was drawn to the sort of abstract analytical qualities of it. And I sort of felt like, well, if I can study physics, I can do anything. Which, of course, not
true.
But it felt, you know, there is some truth to it in the sense that there's a sort of general quality to this type of study. And so, yeah, I did that. I thought I was going to pursue it. But then I remember the moment I threw my applications in the trash for graduate school is when I realized I was going to have to quit playing fiddle.
Oh, you couldn't do both?
Well, you know, you probably could. But at the time, I had a friend who was at MIT in graduate school. He said, well, you're not going to be able to play when you're in graduate school in physics. And it's true, you wouldn't be able to play much, and certainly not the way that I did. I mean, at that point, when I would have been in graduate school in physics, that was when I sort of set off on this adventure, sort of economically treacherous adventure of trying to, you know, become a musician. And that's when I found all of these things that have really made me a musician today. And so I couldn't have done that if I was in physics.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. More music as well. And again, Dan Truman is our guest. He teaches music at Princeton University, a co-founder of Plork. That's the Princeton Laptop Orchestra, which I do want to talk about. Composer, Hardinger, fiddle player, and electronic musician, and instrument maker as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Rosenfeld Cancer Center at Abington Memorial Hospital supports WHYY and offers the services of both a comprehensive cancer center and a hospital that handles complex medical needs. Oncologists are on call around the clock. An emergency trauma center is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A team of specialized physicians is available if other health issues arise. To learn more, amh.org/cancer. Abington Memorial Hospital, the power to heal.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Carl Hiaasen. His new novel, Bad Monkey, begins with a floating body part discovered in the bay by tourists fishing. The characters include a former detective demoted to roach patrol, inspecting restaurant kitchens, and a monkey who got fired from the set of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. From Iran, a preview of Friday's presidential election. Also, a son uncovers the stories of the men who fought alongside his father in World War II. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you're just joining us, Dan Truman is our guest. He's a composer. He teaches music at Princeton University. He plays a Norwegian Hardinger fiddle. He's an electronic musician. He makes instruments as well. His new CD with the Brooklyn Ensemble So Percussion is titled Neither Anvil Nor Pulley. And we've been playing selections from that CD and some of his previous CDs as well. And I'm going to have you say the name of this next song because I do not trust myself to say it correctly.
Right on. Roco Loco, Smoko Toco.
And where did this come from?
Yeah, well, we played this tune on a concert, and my friend and colleague Paul Lansky was there. And afterwards, he said, oh, that was very Rococo, that tune. So sort of very fancy and filigreed. And that sort of, you know, inspired the rest of the title. Because it's not really Rococo. It's a new piece, and it sort of goes kind of crazy wild places.
And was that a name that you can, I mean, you sort of built on this
Rococo
idea?
I think it's my fault, yeah.
Guilty as charged.
That's right.
And it features Beth Myers viola, Monica Mugen on guitar, who's your wife.
That's right.
Jason Truding percussion and melodica.
Yeah.
And then you on Hardinger fiddle. Yeah. Well, let's listen to it. CD QQQ Unpacking the Trailer, and I'm going to have you say the name of it again.
Roco Loco Shmoco Toco.
There's a lot going on in that
song. There's a lot going
on
there, yeah, and the name too, right? So, yeah, it's busy. Lots of lines going by at different speeds, some very slow lines, some very fast stuff. And Jason, who's the drummer, he's also in So Percussion, just a virtuoso. And he sort of plays in and around all of that. And in the midst of that, talk about clapping.
Yes.
There's clapping in both channels, and that's both Jason. Again, he just worked it out, you know, where that clapping should happen, and it's got this wonderful, complex pattern that I still remember in the studio, him doing it, thinking, how is he doing this?
That's great. But it seems like you're so interested in rhythm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I love things that kind of get your, you know, your body moving and really getting it moving in ways that maybe it's not just as, just familiar patterns. Sometimes these the tunes that I like the most seem to pull your body in two or three ways at once.
Oh. Are you athletic? I mean, do you do sports?
I used to do a lot of sports, particularly used to play Ultimate Frisbee a lot, which is a great game. Speaking of things that move fast and slow at the same time.
Yes.
So, I don't know if it comes from that or just, you know, a love of music that has a certain power from the rhythm.
Yeah. You co-founded the Princeton Laptop Orchestra a couple of years ago, right?
Well, 2005, actually.
Oh,
it's been a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, well, so actually talking about, you know, getting your body involved with sound and feeling rhythm and so on. before then, electronic music, it's when you taught it, was very much a solo activity. You'd work in a studio, and then you'd make something, and then you'd share it with somebody. The notion of performing with these things wasn't particularly widespread, and when you did, it tended to be something where you sat behind your computer and you know nobody knew what you're doing.
They thought you were answering your
email.
Answering
email. That's the old joke. That's
exactly.
Right. Yeah, and we still get accused of that sometimes. But the aim of this was to try to find a way to encourage people to make music together with computers in the mix. So that was the whole design. And again, the aim is like I want music making to be energetic and to be, you know, you might break a sweat rather than just sitting there and pressing the space bar and hearing something happen. And so that was the motivation for it.
In fact, I was looking at some things online where, I mean, people are holding their computers and moving them around.
That's right. So the Mac laptops have these built-in sensors to protect the hard drive that actually can sense the orientation of it. But we can just use it for musical purposes. So you can tilt the laptop and have that impact the sound in some ways. Yeah.
And you, I also saw one where, with a controller.
A game
A game like that you would use on a video game, using a controller.
That's right. It's for a golf game. It's got these two strings, and they're supposed to attach to these little gloves you wear. They come with this really small plastic golf club. You're supposed to swing this plastic golf club, and then the strings track your hands, and then a picture of you shows up on the screen. Well, it's a fantastic musical controller.
Because
these strings, they're basically in each hand you have a joystick, so you get two directions. But they also come out, and they come out about 12 feet. So really far, you can step way back, and you know, your arms can be way up high or out and around. And then they also pull on you slightly, so that if you let it go, they'll retract. So you have a little bit of resistance. But they've become sort of a staple of performance with laptop orchestras because they just so naturally engage the body.
So who discovered that? I mean, was there someone playing a video game and they just thought, oh, gosh, look at all these musical possibilities?
Yeah, I learned about them from this really amazing music technologist named Dan Overholt in Denmark, and he was using them to hang them from the ceiling and make these tetherball music things from them. He showed them to me, and I brought them back and showed them to some of our students, and you know, you get the students involved, and all of a sudden, all sorts of ideas come out in terms of how you could use these.
In doing some preparation for the show, I was reading some interviews with you with some very highly technical people describing what you do. And about three pages in, I said to myself, I have no idea what they are talking about.
I'm sorry about that.
No. You're making music, but you're using instruments, that live in this very high-tech world.
That's right. Yeah, it's a world that's got lots of software and technical stuff going on. And, there are a lot of geeks. I count myself among them. And we're there, interested in that part of it, too.
It is interesting to think about the sort of cyborg world that we're all entering, where we're all becoming sort of half computer, half person.
Right. Yeah, and so for me, the question is, what does this mean for us musically? And that was, how can we leverage what these things offer us so that they can bring us to musical places we can't get to otherwise?
Do you have to educate the audience? I mean, I think, whatever the audience is, we're used to seeing and hearing things in a certain kind of way.
Yeah, and in some cases, we really do have to make an effort to explain what's going on. I feel like in for me, the instances where I feel most successful, like with this sober cushion piece, we don't have to explain. It doesn't mean that people understand necessarily how it works, but they can take in the experience of this piece and they can know, wow, there's instrument stuff going on here that I don't know how it works, but it's clearly fusing into some overall experience. And maybe afterwards you explain and so on, but it's not like, oh, you have to know how this works in order to have any chance at all to get into it.
I'd love to play another piece, and this is the wheelbarrow piece. It comes from a CD, Five and a Half Gardens. Help us understand, where did this CD come from, and then we can talk about this piece.
Yeah, this was my first collaboration with Sober Cushion, and it's an evening-length piece. Basically, I made it with my mother. She's a visual artist, and she made these wonderful videos, animations based on paintings that she had done, and the paintings were inspired by artists like Matisse and so on. It's a five-movement piece or so with video projections, a sober percussion with my duo Trollstilt, my wife and I playing. Do you want me to talk about the wheelbarrow in the midst of this?
Yeah, and I picked this only because it's an interesting instrument to
pick up. Yeah, right. Well, so I love trying to find whatever might be musical about anything that we have at our disposal. And this piece, Five and a Half Gardens, is all these garden themes. And about three-quarters of the way through it, the sober percussion guys roll out a big blue wheelbarrow. It's all sorts of music going on, and then out comes this big blue wheelbarrow. And then shortly thereafter, they all gather around it. And I ask them to find two sounds on that wheelbarrow that they can play with their sticks. And then I've composed out this thing for them to play. Meanwhile, there's some electronic stuff. There's some a little bit of singing from Rindy Eckert, sort of a legacy from the previous movement. So it's this hazy place. But basically, it's a percussion piece, but the wheelbarrow is the instrument.
Wow, that's just a... the wheelbarrow piece from Five and a Half Gardens. And I mean, it's interesting. Everything is potentially an instrument, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Just, I mean, the world is just filled with sounds that you can incorporate or play
with.
Yeah,
you know, like the neither anvil nor pulley idea. You look at something and, you know, how can I make music with this?
Yes.
And certainly, I think that's a kind of a primal impulse in a way. So,
Well, we're working backwards on your life. This is, I guess, your first CD. This is a Troll Stilt. Mm-hmm. You on Hardinger fiddle, Monica Mugen on guitar, mm-hmm. your wife. And this is a song called Wallflower. Let's just listen to this. A song called Wallflower, performed by our guest and his wife, Monica Mugen, on guitar, and our guest, Dan Truman, playing Hardinger fiddle. And we selected this one only because we're going to close things out with another Wallflower, which is on your brand new CD. So you keep coming back to music or songs, musical ideas?
I guess I'm not much of a dancer, and so... I sort of trip over my own feet, and so I often feel like a bit of a wallflower. And so some of the tunes that I write feel like they're going to be dance tunes, and then they end up in these very strange places where you really can't dance to them anymore. So that's where that idea came from. Yeah, and both of these tunes, Wallflower and then another Wallflower, they end up in these netherworlds where dancing is probably impossible.
And one quick question before we have to say goodbye. How did you end up at Princeton University?
I went to graduate school there, actually, many years ago, and then I went away, and they had a job open up, and I said, wow, that would be a great job. So I applied for it and was fortunate enough to end up there. It's a really interesting, wide-open program musically, so where kind of a weirdo like me is right at home. Yeah. You know, there's all different types of music being made by the composers there, and so it just feels very lively and not rigid in any way.
And are you working on another? I mean, are you always composing and thinking about the next project?
Oh yeah, I've got all sorts of stuff in the works right now that I'm very excited about. Yeah,
just kind of keeping a lid on it, I guess.
Sort of. It's like, well, which one do I work on now?
Well, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you
so
much.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dan Truman, for joining us today on Radio Times. Again, the composer, Hardinger fiddler. He's an electronic musician. He makes instruments, teaches music at Princeton University, and he's also co-founder of the Princeton Laptop Orchestra, also known as Plork, and his new CD with the Brooklyn Ensemble Soul Percussion is Neither Anvil Nor Pulley. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, this hour produced by Patty McMahon. We're going to close things out in this hour of Radio Times with the close of Another Wallflower.